listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Thanks for downloading the show. I'm Rob Daly. This week, Real Madrid and Atletico claimed wins, but do they need to strengthen now given their impending transfer bans? European football journalist Andy Bressel joins us to discuss that, plus the latest at Marseille, Lyon and Porto, as Iker Casillas makes a costly mistake. Juve and Napoli keep on winning in Italy, but Roma are denied a victory as Luciano Spalletti returns as manager, while Dutch football expert Michael Jongsma is here as the Eredivisie gets back underway. And I'll tell you about Bayern's 15-year-old goalkeeper, already dubbed the next Manuel Neuer.
This is Football in Europe.
No Chris Parrott this week, but delighted to say to help us along is European football journalist Andy Bressel. Andy, thanks for coming back on the show.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Mate, you were at the NBA the other day. How was that?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was quite exciting. The game last year between the Knicks and the Bucks was really terrible. But the Magic and Raptors came through. It was very exciting. A lot of football-y faces there. Drogs, obviously. Robert Pires. Troy Deeney was sat just in front of us. He had a slightly better seat than Lethal Bizzle.
Oh, wow. So now we know the social pecking order.
Yeah, we do. It goes Deeney, Bizzle, Brassel.
Very good. But let's switch things to football quickly. And let's start with France on this week's show, because there's a game that I'm sure you have a great affection for involving Lyon at the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm still scratching my head this morning, figuring out how they managed to lose the derby against Saint-Étienne. There's clearly been a big improvement already under Bruno Genesio, the erstwhile assistant to Hubert Fournier, and now the coach after Fournier was sacked on Christmas Eve. But even if the game is a lot nicer, they didn't manage to get the result. I think Saint-Étienne had two proper efforts at goal, and one of them ended up being the winner by Alexander Söderlund after a really bad mistake by Corentin Tolisso, who's been in poor form this season. And I thought it was interesting, actually, on Canal Plus afterwards, the pundit Pierre Menes, who is known for quite a controversial view, but this I thought was a very sensible one. He said that Lyon weren't brave enough early enough, and I think that's absolutely right. You know, they were technically loads better than Saint-Étienne, but you know, they didn't quite take the game by the scruff of the neck. They didn't really create a lot for Alex Lacazette. They're in a bit of a spot now because they're 7 points off second place. I think second place is worth underlining rather than third place, because of course, since there have been two qualifying rounds for the Champions League for French clubs, for the third place French club, no third place French club has managed to get into the Champions League. So I think, right, especially given that weak field, you've got to think, you know, the second place is really up for grabs. Monaco won at the weekend at Lorient, so they're up there now. But, you know, it's really anyone's for the taking. Lyon could still do it if they put together a good run of form, starting with the biggest game so far in their new stadium against Marseille next Sunday, which I'll be at. But they really need to get something out of that now. They really need to win that to get back on the road. And they'll probably need to get another striker in before the end of the window, because, of course, they've let Claudio Beauvau go to Celta Vigo this weekend. So it's really Lacazette and youngsters. You know, you can't rely on them. So, you know, they need a little bit of extra clout in the goal-scoring department.
Andy, we've been asking people to tweet in questions about all kinds of European football. Marseille won 3-1 at Caen at the weekend. Another away win. Their away form's great. But Hector David wants to know, why won't Michel buy another striker for Marseille?
Well, I think to an extent it's part of him having his hands tied. I don't think there's been any question of him ever really having control over transfers. And when you talk about strikers, he was asked about Wissam Ben Yedder of Toulouse the other week, who's been in great form in recent weeks. He scored a hat-trick at Reims last week. He scored the winner at Marseille and against Marseille in the League Cup just this week gone. And it was interesting. I think a few people pointed out, notably Jeremy Smith of French Football Weekly, saying it's possibly one of the only situations where you'll see a guy score against the team and not celebrate out of respect to his possible future employers. keeping it careful there. But they won't get Ben Yedder this January. because Toulouse would be crazy to let him go. They're in a bit of a spot at the bottom of the table, and he's the only genuine goal scorer amongst that clutch of clubs at the bottom of the table. And of course, Michel was asked recently about Ben Yedder, and he didn't know who he was, which I think is interesting. Wow. Because it's a tough ask when an overseas coach comes in to familiarise himself with the league, but you know, come on, he's been there a couple of months now, and for him to turn around and go, I don't know much about this player, is kind of reminiscent a little bit of David Moyes at Real Sociedad when he wasn't really that sure about Iyad Mendy. So it underlines one of the problems with Michel's reign, even though he does have quite an interesting squad at his disposal. I do think this lack of some backup for Batshuayi is a real problem. And this is certainly a problem when it comes to cracking open teams at the Velodrome. I mean, they've not won a league game there since September, which is not something that can really go on. You know, they're looking to get up towards European places. I don't think they'll get in the Champions League this season. But, you know, you look at the names they're linked with in the window, and there doesn't seem to be any other idea apart from Ben Yedder. So you wonder really what's happening recruitment-wise. So much was done in the summer to the taste of Marcelo Bielsa, and of course he went after one game. So they're a little bit stuck, especially with Lucas Campos getting injured.
We've had another tweet in, Andy. This one coming from Dream Sislak to ask, are there any goalscorers under 25 that Arsenal can buy this summer? Arsenal fans always obsessed with buying a new striker. Would someone like Batshuayi potentially come into that category at Marseille?
Yeah, I think Batshuayi is a great choice because, for me, he should be Belgium's starter at Euro 2016.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I really think he should. And, you know, a lot of people are thinking about Lukaku, which is fair enough. They're thinking about Benteke. But if you look at their records in Euro qualification, Lukaku didn't get a single goal. I think Benteke got one. You know, below that, you're looking at Laurent Depoitre of Genk, who scored against Andorra, I think it was. All the goals really were coming from De Bruyne and Hazard penalties.
So
it's a problem. Batshuayi, on the other hand, was excellent when they played the friendly against Italy just before Christmas, back in November. His movement's terrific. He's a bright finisher. And he's an impact player. I wonder if, to an extent, that condemns him. People think, you know, he started, six league games for Marseille last season, that he's all about punch off the bench. But he's proved this season that he's more than that. I think he's interesting for Arsenal because he's got a way to develop. He's very intuitive. He makes good runs. If they were to buy him, for example, they'd want to do it this side of the Euros rather than the other side of the Euros, because I just think, you know, it could shoot through the roof, especially when you think in terms of a Premier League club buying him. Of course, Lacazette is a player who will continue to be mentioned. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I wonder if he'll actually get to the Euros, because there's such an extraordinary amount of competition. I think you look at what Kevin Gamero is doing at Sevilla at the moment. He's in absolutely tremendous form.
If you'd said this 12 months ago, Andy, that would have been a crazy idea. Lacazette could potentially not make that squad.
That's absolutely right. But I think really Martial has emerged at just the wrong time for him. He's fallen out of form at just the wrong time. He's got some work to do if he's going to get in the squad. And I think, funnily enough, the same goes for another Lyon player, Mathieu Valbuena, who, of course, has been a real mainstay of the squad. Personally, I think the aforementioned Ben Yedder is an interesting one. No one thought he would make it as a professional footballer. I mean, he won't get in the France squad. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think he's left it a little bit late. But even though he's not a name, I think he's a very interesting one for Arsenal, because he comes from a futsal background, actually. People thought he was too little to make it as a pro footballer, and he came into pro football actually quite late. But that's why Lyon are so interested in him, because he's a 1-2 touch player, whereas Beauvau, for example, who didn't really work out for them because he was used to more direct service, Ben Yedder is exactly their sort of player. I think he's exactly Arsenal sort of player as well.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Andy, let's look at La Liga now. At the weekend, it feels like you have to say the word Gary Neville before Valencia. You know, prefix it. So Gary Neville's Valencia at the weekend got a 2-2 draw with Rayo Vallecano. I saw most of this game and I thought Valencia were pretty
lousy.
Poor. Really poor. And first half in particular, I couldn't see any structure or coaching guidance to the way they were playing at all. I mean, are you concerned or are Valencia fans, are they concerned about the way that, that Gary Neville's actually going about his job?
They're really concerned, and you know, some were shouting for him to go at the ever-demanding Mestalla yesterday. But you know, you can understand that, that they're a mess, and I think it's a reflection of a club, really. You know, they feel a little bit directionless at the moment. Whatever Gary Neville's merits or otherwise, as a coach, I think there's, you know, there's just frustration at this sense of cronyism that he's jumped the queue a little bit. That same sort of principle got Nuno in charge in the first place. But, you know, it's easy to forget it was good for Nuno for a while before it ran out. You know, he was given a 1-year contract initially, and then he was given a generous extension on the back of his first 6-7 months work before the bottom fell out of it, which I don't think is entirely his fault. You know, if you look on paper, Valencia spent a lot of money on players this summer just gone, but really it was firming up loans. You know, there was very little new blood in. He didn't get a new striker in that he really wanted. But the concerning thing is, I think, since Gary Neville's been in charge, is they've looked a little bit dodgy at the back. And, you know, that was something that they were always good with when Nuno was in charge. You know, you had that terrific partnership, of course, between Mustafi and Otamendi. Otamendi going is a huge blow. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because he was the best defender in La Liga for my money last season. Of course, Eamon Abdennour, who's come in, is a very good player, but he's struggled to settle. There's no doubt about that. And he wasn't called up yesterday. So, you know, you wonder what the future is for him under Gary Neville. You know, they showed fight in the second half, and it was interesting to see, you know, the younger players step up and take responsibility. Zakaria Bakali was really good, I thought, when he came on, and he helped to create the second goal for one of the other substitutes, Paco Alcácer. But, you know, I think there's a degree of frustration from Gary Neville and from the fans as well. So, you know, the next couple of weeks are going to be vital for him. I wonder where they're going to be at, because come the end of the season, they're not going to be in the Champions League. There's no getting around that. You know, they're 17 points off the Champions League places now. There's no way of bridging that. It's absolutely not possible. We're nearly at the end of January. And, you know, they've shown nothing to suggest that they can shoot up the table. But, you know, they've got a decent quarterfinal draw in the Copa del Rey against Las Palmas. They've got something to aim towards. I think if they can aim towards that sort of top six in Europa League, that is something that might get him another chance. But, of course, it all depends on what other coaches might be available in the summer.
Yes, very true, and there will be a few. So let's just go through some of the other scores very briefly. Barcelona beat Athletic Bilbao 6-0. Messi coming off at halftime as a precaution. He'll be assessed this week. A slight muscle concern, but Luis Enrique said we just don't want to take any risks. Luis Suarez got a hat-trick in that game, by the way. And a quick one on Arda Turan. Immediate impact from Arda Turan having sat out half the season.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we talked about this when I was on before.
That
Barcelona were in such an enviable position in one way, because it's such an unusual situation in that, you know, a player comes, but they can't register him for 6 months. So he has that ultimate settling in period. You know, he's not like any other January signing. Well, apart from Alex Vidal, I suppose. you know, they're completely acclimatized to the new city, the new surroundings. They maybe got a house and not living in a hotel anymore. On a personal level and on a professional on-pitch level, they're already used to training, and they've got some sort of complicity with their new teammates. Arda Turan really needed a rest as well. One of the main reasons he wanted to leave Atletico is because he felt that Simeone had run him into the ground.
He had, and he had, in truth. So let's talk about the Madrid clubs, Andy, because Real Madrid got a 5-1 win against Sporting Gijon at the weekend. They were 4-0 up inside 18 minutes, and all of LBBC scored. And Atletico won 3-0 at Las Palmas, Griezmann scoring again. And it looks like an authentic challenge from Atletico. But the transfer bans have come in. We were just talking about the one that inflicted Barcelona. If the ban does come into play from the end of this window, and we expect... Well, do we expect both clubs to appeal?
Yeah, we do. We do. Right. And, you know, if you look at with Barcelona, it bought them a lot of time. You know, the initial decision was in April 14. The appeal was rejected in June, July. And then they went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which brought down its final verdict in December. So essentially it bought them 8 months. So you could say that if this case followed precedent, if these cases follow precedent, and there's no reason to suggest that that won't be the case, you know, they should get the summer transfer window at least. I think it's more interesting to see what this will do to Real Madrid than to Atletico, because of course they've both feared this sort of sanction ever since what happened to Barcelona happened to Barcelona, because you know, the run along fairly similar guidelines, of course. You know, of course, we have to say that the Spanish FA, the RFEF, has been disciplined for allowing this to happen. So I think the clubs feel that, that they haven't received the right guidance in terms of their marshalling of young players and registration of young players to a certain degree. But I think Atletico are a lot more planned for this, certainly ostensibly, because you know, you look at what they've done over the past couple of months. They've got in two central midfielders already this window, with Canavetta and Augusto Fernandez, who came in from Celta. They've tied up a lot of players to extended contracts, notably, I think, Juanma Jimenez and Griezmann. And that's so important, I think, not just to protect their investment, but for the future. You know, Griezmann's going to be one of the best forward players in the world over the coming years, if he's not already. I think you could make an argument that Jimenez will be the best centre-back in the world in the next 2 or 3 years. He's absolutely outstanding, and he has been since he's a teenager, and that's what made them feel they could let Miranda go. If you look at the forward players that have come in, like Jackson Martinez, Vieto, they've got a way to go. You know, they've not really settled. And yet Atletico is still top of the league. So, you know, they can really expand. You've got the fact that Simeone's contracted to 2020 as well. You get the feeling that they're all pulling in the right direction. So two windows transfer ban would be, you know, it would be a fair inconvenience. I don't think there's any getting around that. But on the other hand, they're fairly well stacked to cope with it. Where Real Madrid go, especially under Florentino, and they can't bring in a big star, I think that's a question.
Let's read out some of the tweets then that have been sent in to you, Andy. Stuart just wanted to make the point about the ban. He says, when you look at the sizes of both Real Madrid and Atletico squads and the ability to recall loanees as well, I can't see either producing any panic buys in January. Atletico did so much business in the summer to add to their numbers, yes, and strengthen the squad. So I think that's a good point.
Yes.
Shardo Shearer wants to ask you, Andy, does it strengthen Zidane's chances of being in charge next season? Do you see any correlation between the potential to do business and whether Zizou will get longer than, you know, to the end of the campaign?
I think it makes it a more, it's a good point, because it makes it a more difficult sell to a candidate coming from outside if they can't do any transfer business for two windows. They can't really put their stamp on the team. I think the fact that he knows the B team as well from being its coach is an advantage. That he knows the young players at the club is an advantage. And of course, he's always been, you know, a lot of people have talked in recent days about maybe this will affect, you know, releasing or not Cristiano Ronaldo to go somewhere else, perhaps Paris Saint-Germain. You know, Zidane never wanted to let him go in the first place. So I think that sort of stability is probably quite helpful.
Okay, Andy, we'll just do a couple of quick ones. Atletico are top, meanwhile, in La Liga, but Barcelona just 2 points behind with a game in hand after their exploits at the Club World Cup. Portugal, Andy, Jonathan Stevens tweeted in to say, it'd be good to hear your thoughts, Andy, on the current problems at Porto this season. Beaten 1-0 by Guimarães at the weekend.
That's right. And the cover of Record, one of the biggest sports newspapers in Portugal, this morning has Iker Casillas dropping the goal for Bubasare's winning goal. And it just says Butterfingers on top of it. And, you know, this was always going to be a problem for Casillas, in that, you know, there were going to be a lot of games this season where he was stood as a virtual spectator. And, you know, any mistake he made was going to be hugely underlined, especially a costly mistake like this that turned out to be a winning goal. I mean, the fact that they couldn't score for the next 86 minutes wasn't Casillas's fault, but, you know, it did mean his error turned out to be crucial, and they looked disjointed. There's no doubt about that. It was interesting, of course, the fact that Sergio Conceição, well known for his work as a player for Portugal, was the Guimarães coach last night, and it looks like it might be his last game, because he's one of the leading contenders, if not the leading contender, to take over the Porto job, which is quite interesting because he's not been at Guimarães for that long, and previously he'd been in charge of their local rivals, Braga. So, you know, he's had a busy little while. He gave quite an emotional speech after the game to the press. He didn't deny any of the speculation. So it'd be interesting to see where that one goes. André, who of course was playing for Guimarães last season, he said afterwards that the players have been told to expect someone permanent coming in to replace Rui Barros, who's been manning the ship for the last little while. They're only 5 points off the top despite that loss, but you know, they really should have taken advantage of the fact that Sporting dropped points on Friday night against Tondela. For me, Sporting look the best place because not only do they have a really good squad, but they've got Jorge Jesus, who's by far the best coach in the division. I think that makes a huge difference. Julen Lopetegui had to go. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But the problem they have is that they've got the best squad player for player in Portugal, Porto. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But a lot of that squad is very much tailored for Lopetegui. The important thing for them is not to drop any more points in the next three games, which are very, very winnable, starting with a home game against Marítimo before they go to Benfica in the middle of February, which is now a huge match, of course.
And there had been, just a quick one, but no AVB Mourinho rumours to Porto, or have there been a little bit of that?
There have been, and I don't think it's escaped the notice of several humorists that this would be a marvellous reunion between Casillas and Mourinho. Maybe it's the prospect of Mourinho coming in that's making him nervous and drop crosses. But AVB is a target for next season. You know, there's no getting away from that. Their top two targets were Villas-Boas and Marco Silva, but neither were in the position to come now. I would not be surprised to see, say, Conceição come in maybe on an 18-month contract, and if it didn't work out, or if someone better became available in the summer to replace him then.
Andy, thank you very much for coming on the show, mate. Really appreciate it, as always.
Absolute pleasure. Speak soon.
Coming up, the headlines, and then we'll speak to Dutch football expert Michael Jongsma. Luciano Spalletti drew his first game back in charge of Roma. They were held to a 1-1 scoreline by bottom side Verona. Rudy Garcia was sacked after a run of one win in seven league games last week. Gonzalo Higuain helped keep Napoli top with two goals in a 3-1 win over Sassuolo. Higuain now has 20 goals this term. Udinese officially opened fully the redeveloped Stadio Friuli on Sunday, but they were beaten 4-0 by champions Juventus in a disappointing day. Juve were 3-0 up inside 26 minutes, Dybala with two, they've won 10 in a row. Meanwhile, AC Milan beat Fiorentina 2-0. Kevin Prince-Boateng scored his first goal since returning. Balotelli came off the bench. Brendan Rodgers says he could take a job abroad. The former Liverpool manager sacked in October can speak fluent Spanish, and he was recently linked with a return to Swansea. Ashley Cole is reportedly on his way to LA Galaxy. The MLS club hoped to convince Roma to cancel his contract with 6 months left on the deal. The former England international is yet to play once this season. And Bayern face Hamburg next Friday when the Bundesliga season returns. So could a 15-year-old goalkeeper make the bench? 6'5", Christian Fuchtel was invited by Guardiola to join the team's training camp in Qatar. Manuel Neuer says his main attributes are his size, coordination and quality on the ball. Well, it certainly sounds familiar.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Joining us on the podcast now to talk about all things Eredivisie is Michael Jongsma. Michael, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, Rob, no problem.
Are you glad to have the Eredivisie back?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a bit of a peaceful month, which is good from time to time, but you do, well, it starts to ache at one point and you definitely want to get back in the league. And I've had my fair share of Premier League football, but seeing the Eredivisie back was quite thrilling, actually.
So at the weekend, let's start with Ajax. I caught the final half an hour of their 1-0 win at Den Haag, and they were actually holding on towards the end of the game. But you, from what I've heard anyway, have serious reservations about the full qualities of Frank de Boer as a head coach at Ajax?
I mean, the way this game panned out was typical Ajax this season, in that they got the lucky break or the early break and then basically decided to hold on to that because they were not able to inject some extra creativity in their side. It was not expansive, beautiful, free-flowing football. And the last big player they lost was Daley Blind, which is more than 1.5 years ago. And for some reason, Ajax, they have been investing quite a lot of money in players. They've bought Milik on a permanent deal. Players coming in that should be improving the team, or at least the quality of the squad. But the one thing I feel is that Frank de Boer kind of suffers from what Van Gaal has at Manchester United as well. It's that the obsession with minimalizing risk and the obsession with keeping the ball rather than trying to open a game up a bit has completely hampered the creativity in the side itself. And Ajax are just not that good to watch. And they have the reputation to be a very good team to watch, but it's not been like that for years and years. And especially after Christian Eriksen had left, they've basically been scraping their way to league titles. And the main strength at the moment that they have is their defense, which is just, well, not something you'd associate Ajax with.
So do you think De Boer is overrated as a coach? Because quite often, Michael, he is linked with high-profile jobs in the Premier League.
I do think he's very good at instilling a certain amount of confidence in a squad. I mean, he's a serial winner as a player and as a coach. It's quite fun to see. He really convinces his squad that they are actually really, really good. And he's been really, well, he's been rewarded handsomely for that by winning 4 league titles in a row. The main reservation I have with him is that I don't think he's tactically developing himself any further. He does struggle to work with the flashy, slightly inconsistent type of players. So he does prefer like the most grounded and model professional in his team rather than someone who has a bit more creativity. And I'm not sure how that's going to translate to another club. He does have pedigree, but I'm just not sure if he's a great innovator, like, for example, Jurgen Klopp.
There's talk that Napoli are gonna sign one of his key players.
They had a bid accepted, of over 25 million euros for Richelle Bazour, a midfielder only 19 years old now, I think. May still be 18. He's a terrific talent, and the offer was had bonuses up to 40 million euros. But this is a midfielder, Dutch international, who's kind of in the Vieira mold, been tracked by Barcelona, who have been vocal to his manager, his agent, that they are tracking his progress as well. Both the manager in Frank de Boer and Richelle Bazour himself decided it would probably be best for him to stay in at Ajax for at least 2 years.
There was talks of him getting some racist abuse as well during the Ado Den Haag game.
Yeah, it was quite a bit worse than a bit. It was really quite horrific. A lot of monkey noises and all that kind of stuff, and kind of went on for a whole game. And this kind of developed over the course of the game, and all the media and all media outlets and pundits and stuff like that were going, well, when is somebody going to put an end to this and maybe walk off the pitch or suspend the game and all that kind of stuff? But in the end, they just let it happen. And all credits to Bazour for keeping a cool head about it, because I can imagine this is quite a horrific scene. And the weird thing is that for Ado, there are plenty of black players on the pitch as well. So it's not like it's a completely white club playing a club with a few people with a different skin color, basically. So it's a really, really quite weird, but it's kind of turned into people pointing to each other. The club itself and is usually the party that needs to take responsibility and say, well, we'll suspend the game. The referee had that as an excuse, which I can understand, but from a moral point of view, it would have been better to just suspend the game, because he is still in charge. It kind of went like that, like people saying, well, it's not our responsibility to take at this point. But the KNVB have just come out with a fairly strong statement on how they condemn what's happened, and they will investigate it. So
there was another big game at the weekend as PSV went to Feyenoord and won 2-0. Feyenoord, one of those teams challenging to take the title off PSV. But there was an incident involving Colin Kazim-Richards ahead of this game. Can you explain this one?
Yeah, Colin Kazim-Richards, well, he's a bit of a controversial character. Let's
I was trying to see what you were going to say.
But yeah, he's last season he came in on but because Pierre van Hooijdonk had tipped him for Feyenoord, and he did quite okay. And even though he has that kind of explosive character that is and has a bit of a nasty streak to him as well, Feyenoord decided to sign him because they could sign him on a free, and they were hoping to make some profit on that. Because I don't think they ever really planned for him to become a first-team player this season. But then they signed another striker. They had extended the contract of a young striker in Ashabar already. And he was all of a sudden the third or second striker in the pecking order there. He doesn't really take that kind of thing well. And he has that kind of feistiness and getting into to fights and scraps and with both media and on the pitch, and he's kind of considered a more disruptive influence now. Algemeen Dagblad, one of the leading news sport newspapers in the Netherlands, ran a story on Tuesday that people actually thought he was really an annoying character and difficult to deal with, and those voices came from inside the club. So I do get the feeling that it is slightly orchestrated, like a little one-two between media and club. But yeah, the writer of that story on Friday was at the press conference. He's Mikko Schalke, he's a Feyenoord watcher. And Colin Kazim-Richards came at him saying, well, you're going down, you're going down. And it's quite abusive to him. And that led to him being left out of the squad for the PSV game. And I think they're having talks with him today, and that might end in a suspension or whatever. But he's not really making a popular figure out of himself. And Dirk Kuyt has actually come out and said something about it as well, that he needs to get his head straight and all that kind of stuff. And well, if you have Dirk Kuyt against you at Feyenoord, then you really, really have a problem, because he's basically the president of the club. But yeah, it's kind of difficult, because he started out quite promising, but he's not really done anything this season, and he's only been in the news for negative stories like this. So it looks like his adventure in the Netherlands is coming to an end.
It's a shame. He's always a player who showed promise, and he certainly did last season. I think he scored something like 13 goals. Michael Twente, a team who won the Eredivisie under Steve McLaren not too long ago, have been threatened with relegation all season. Only 1-8 prior to the resumption of the season, but they got a 4-0 win against Heracles. Do you expect Twente to still stay up?
Well, it kind of depends on one man and one man only. Twente are still in the relegation playoff places. They beat Heracles, as you said, on Friday, 4-0, a handsome victory, a deserved victory as well. And their local rivals, Heracles, were in fourth at that point as well. So kind of a shock, actually, that they went about it so concise. But yeah, Hakim Ziyech has been the absolute star for that side so ever since he joined 1.5 years ago, and if he stays, and the chances that he will stay are rather small, and then they have a fighting chance of getting there. But yeah, the clubs interested in him, it's a long list, but some of the names mentioned that were on the in the stands this Friday were AC Milan, Borussia Dortmund, VfB Stuttgart, and some other clubs as well. So there's serious interest, and again he turned in a performance that just resonated all of the praise that he has had over the last 6 and 7 months.
Michael, you've just had the winter break, obviously, in the Netherlands. What do the Dutch clubs actually get up to?
Only two clubs stayed in the Netherlands, actually, Heerenveen and I think it was FC Utrecht stayed in the Netherlands, and all the rest of them went to the more sunny places in the world, which where they have played several friendlies and all that kind of stuff, and do some team building. So yeah, it's kind of a nice period for those clubs. They tend to actually give the players a week off or so, and you do see some teams actually improving after a few weeks off. Some because they're just not as hindered by fatigue, and others because they actually have a better understanding than they've had before.
What is a Dutch Christmas like, Michael?
Well, I don't think we're boozing it up as much as they do in the UK, to be honest. But no, it's typical to go one day to your family and then the next day, well, maybe to the family of your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. So yeah, we have had Boxing Day fixtures several years ago, which I thought was kind of nice to actually have a moment outside for once during these days, because you're basically locked in for two or three days anyway. But yeah, it's not been like that, so we do have to rely on the fixture list of the PL. And I think the Belgians are doing some Boxing Day fixtures these days as well. So I mean, that's what you kind of have to rely on if you want to get away from your family for a bit.
Mikael, finally, what's the latest with Johan Cruyff? Because I think it was back in October that it became public that he had been diagnosed with lung cancer. So we're, what, 3 months on from that? Is there much reporting of it in the Netherlands at the moment?
No, it's all gone a bit quiet. No, from what I understand, he's quite positive and really fighting for his chances. But a former teammate of his, Benny Miller, actually said on radio that his wife, Danny, is not as positive as he is. But yeah, they're really battling it at the moment. And usually he's always somewhere, at least in the spotlight. Maybe not as direct, but at least his voice and he's basically the conscience of Dutch football. And now it's all gone a bit quiet surrounding that. So it's a bit of a weird thing to experience, actually.
Mikael, thank you very much for coming on the show. If people want to hear or read any of your work, where can they find it?
Well, they can find it on www.benefoot.net. And we also have a podcast with Peter McPhilly on Eredivisie, which you can find on iTunes and SoundCloud and on the website as well. So,
Mikael, thank you very much. That's all we have time for on Football in Europe this week. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes if you have enjoyed the show. And continue to tweet us, FIE Podcast, on Twitter.
This is Football in Europe.